Good morning, Chief Justice Steele, and may it please the Court. My name is Bernard O'Donnell. I'm here on behalf of the defendant, Adam LaCates, who was convicted of possession of a firearm by a person prohibited in the Superior Court in Newcastle County. The Court made two rulings below, which we've alleged were error on appeal. The first ruling was the validity of the seizure of the firearm involved. The second ruling was whether there was sufficient evidence to establish beyond reasonable doubt that our client was in possession of that weapon. Insofar as the first ruling, the suppression ruling, says the trial court ruled that there was an abandonment of the vehicle involved where the weapon was found. The defense argued that there was insufficient reasonable suspicion for a Terry stop of the defendant, and that tainted the subsequent seizure. The court found that there was reasonable and articulable suspicion. The defense argued that there wasn't probable cause to search the vehicle, and the question was whether the disclaimer of ownership diverted the defendant of the right to later contest the seizure or abandonment of the vehicle. The Superior Court found, in essence, that it did not technically invalidate standing to contest the vehicle, but essentially found that there was a waiver of the right to contest the search of the vehicle. The defense argued that implicit in the finding that the vehicle was abandoned was that left of the gas pump was abandoned was that there were no complaints from Wawa and that it was legally parked. Says the court found that it's Wawa, not a Super G. Even if Wawa doesn't object, it's not unreasonable.
Now, am I correct? The record shows that it was at the pumps as opposed to a space, so legally parked, but
correct.
At the pumps.
Correct. But that is not necessarily, although it permits an inference that it may have been abandoned, it doesn't establish that it's so. I don't know whether anyone else has had the experience, but I've experienced in my says life, actually not being able to start a car after filling it with gasoline. I think we've all had those types of vehicles perhaps at some time in our life.
I'm not sure I understand what the issue is. If a car is parked there and everyone around has disclaimed ownership, it's parked at a pump, and it meets the description of a vehicle that has been involved in a crime, why can't the police seize it and tow it under any circumstances?
Well, one of the interesting things to point about this is that if it meets the description of a vehicle involved in the crime, it wasn't necessarily involved in a crime. There was precious little information concerning what had happened in Sparrow Run. There were shots fired and a vehicle fled from the scene, a white Pontiac and a gold Lumina. It doesn't mean that necessarily the occupants of the vehicle or whoever is driving a vehicle committed a crime. They may have been the victim of a crime. We don't know at this point. In addition, at the pump, it was evident from the hearing that there are, in fact, two white Pontiacs that were at the gas station. What's the chances of that? Well, there are very good chances of that.
What I'm trying to understand is why can't the police seize the vehicle, whether they're correct or not that it was abandoned under these circumstances, when there's no one there voicing opposition?
And
who would be the person to voice opposition?
The point we're going to rely upon is that the defense argued that there were no complaints from the Wawa, where the police didn't check with anyone at the Wawa. Do you know why this vehicle is out here? Did anyone report that it's not established? Is AAA coming for it?
Well, but then explain to me why it makes any difference at all whether there were or weren't complaints from Wawa.
Well, I think it does make a difference, and let me use as an illustration a case that was never, that was somewhat well known, it says in the bar, but was never reduced to a decision. There were two college students arrested up at the Barnes & Noble on Concord Pike about 2-3 years ago, and they were there to appear for a appearance by Senator Rick Santorum. And somebody found out that they might make a critical question or two and asked that the police officer who was detailed there remove them. So they were removed. They were arrested. I think one was a member of the bar's daughter. It may have been Rich Galperin. I think her name was Stacy Galperin. She was removed along with her friend. They were arrested. Then they were later unarrested. The problem in that case was, though, that It wasn't Barnes & Noble who ordered them removed. It was Rick Santorum's administrative assistant. If Barnes & Noble had asked the state police officer to order them removed, there would have been no problem. That's the distinction we make in this case, that it wasn't, this was private property, and no one from Wawa was involved in this to say that, oh, officer, sure, I have no idea what that vehicle is, take it. It's for all we know, it could have been a vehicle owned by the clerk that was parked in front of a pump that didn't operate.
Well, I guess where I'm missing the point is I don't understand why it makes any difference. If you want to consider a convenience store to be private property in the true sense, it's not open to business invitees and therefore less private than the ordinary, why do you have to check with the owner of the property before you declare the car abandoned and remove it from the scene or do your inventory search at the scene?
I think you do. I submit that you would. Otherwise, a police officer could go to someone's driveway, says anywhere, see a vehicle that's in it, knock on the door if nobody's home. They make that effort and remove it as abandoned.
I guess my distinction between a convenience store open to business invitees and a private driveway, to me, that's a huge difference.
And let's factor in the circumstances of this case. Your client is standing next to what turns out to be your client's car. And your client says to the police, I didn't know anything about that car. And then your client complains that the police seized the car without checking with the store. How do we factor that in? Since if your client had said, it's my car, the police would have then known it wasn't abandoned. Whatever they would have done after that, we don't know. But we have the owner of the car standing next to the car, denying it's his car, and then complaining that the police check with everybody else and decide to tow it.
The point's well taken, but I'm thinking perhaps if there was no one there, says to answer, is it if there was no one there to answer or he didn't answer?
We have enough trouble with this case.
I'll move on to the possession.
Well, what follows from all this, or the question that follows from all this, is what should the policeman have done in your view?
Check with Wawa to see if they wanted the vehicle removed.
All right.
I can't explain any further than that. Insofar as the possession by a firearm by a person prohibited ruling, the defense argued that there was no evidence that the defendant knew the gun was there, nor is there any evidence that he had the capability or ability to control its destination. The court ruled that there was no logical, common-sense reason that Mr. LaCates would have said, it's not my car, unless he knew at the time that the weapon was in the car. We submit that there are other reasonable inferences, says, from that statement, other than that, which do not establish guilt beyond a lead inevitably to a finding of guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. For example, the title of this car was not properly transferred. It's obvious that the owner of the car was already in violation of the motor vehicle law. It's likely that the car was uninsured under those circumstances, because in most circumstances where people don't properly transfer a vehicle, it's because they can't produce insurance to a motor vehicle when they're purchasing a vehicle through a private purchase. So that's a reasonable explanation for why he disowned, for why he claimed he didn't own the car.
So when there are multiple reasonable inferences and the trial judge picks one as opposed to the others, how do we review that?
I'd ask the court to review it based upon the court's standard of review in the Jan White case. And in that case, it was evident that the state argues in these cases, and we're arguing that it's not a standard of if there's some evidence to support a conviction, if there's some evidence to support a conviction, some circumstantial evidence, then the conviction must stand. That was not, says the rule, that is not the rule, and the court expressed it very succinctly in White's case. Quote, at page 90 of the White decision, the circumstantial evidence presented might have enabled a rational jury to conclude that it was more likely than not that Jan knew there was cocaine in the walk-in closet. But no rational jury could have concluded beyond a reasonable doubt that she exercised dominion and control over it. So knowledge, that a contraband is present in a location, which you have access to, does not establish beyond reasonable doubt that you have possession of it in order to convict the person of possession of that contraband. That's very evident for the way some evidence supporting, says the verdict, is not evidence to establish guilt beyond reasonable doubt.
How do we deal with what appear to be the facts on the record and our standard of review on credibility assessments? So if anything I say is not supported by the record, correct me, because it's my understanding that the state's case, circumstantially at least, was it was your client's car. He was standing next to the car. It's logical to assume he drove the car, and that his gun was found under this armrest right next to the driver. And in the abstract, it's logical to assume the driver of the car would know there was a gun under the armrest or be charged with that. Then there's testimony that someone else is brandishing the gun and that your client may or may not have seen them brandishing the gun, and that this other person put it under the armrest and that may or may not have been known to your client. And in any event, the state's fallback position is there's constructive joint possession. So somehow the trier of fact, like the instruction to the jury, has to reconcile all of this evidence, if possible, and come up with a consistent, logical explanation. And in this case, after a bench trial, the judge said, I convict you beyond a reasonable doubt. Given our standard of review, how do we deal with that?
I suggest we deal with it as in, says the White case. There's some evidence to support an inference that he had possession of the weapon, but it doesn't establish guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. For example, he may have had invalid, questionable legal title to the car. Let's say, admit it was his car. He didn't necessarily, says, drive it. Second of all, there was no doubt. The car wasn't registered, says, the weapon was not registered, says, to him. The weapon was registered to Gaunt's father-in-law, who there was testimony was seen brandishing the weapon. Just because the weapon is brandished, there was no evidence showing that our client was in possession of that weapon. I walked past a Capitol Police officer who's armed. I was near him. I walked into court this morning. That doesn't mean because I'm in proximity to the Capitol Police officer that I have possession of the firearm, says, that he possesses. In these circumstances, we don't know what happened prior to the officer's arrival. Our client was observed between the two vehicles. Gaunt, whose apparent weapon it was, at least the inference that his father-in-law owned the weapon, he was in the passenger of the other vehicle. For all we know, it's every bit as reasonable an inference that Gaunt had been somewhere, and prior to the police arrival in making the U-turn in Route 40 and turning around, he had decided to distance himself from the weapon. He may have been in the Lumina. He may have been in the Pontiac. He may have decided that I'll put as much distance as I can between where I am and the Lumina, and ran over and stuck the weapon in a vehicle that he wasn't in, since it was his weapon.
I think, you know, all of your points are good, and they indicate an argument you can make to the trier of fact. But if we go back to just looking at this evidence, and again, our standard of review, let's assume hypothetically all we have is the owner of the car next to the car that he owns, and a weapon that belongs to someone else under the armrest. Tell me, in your view, why that's insufficient when the owner of the car is, we'll assume, inferentially driven the car to the Wawa, and there's a gun under the armrest on the front seat. Why doesn't that support a conviction?
The owner of the car was not next to the car. He was between the two vehicles.
I agree.
Secondly, there's no evidence that he was in the car when the weapon was in the car. It's perfectly plausible that given that scene, somebody didn't want to get caught from a weapon. It's just as likely that it may have been Gaunt who actually, the rendition that he had a legal right to possession of the firearm, he may have run and put it in someone else's car, in our client's car. And from it, our client could have been in the bathroom, in the Wawa. It says, we don't know. There is, our client is not in control of the vehicle when we know that the weapon was in the vehicle. That's the problem with this case, like the problem in Jan White's case.
Well, help me with the Holden case. The language that arguably applies here is this court has held that the custodian of an automobile is presumed by reason of his status as custodian to have dominion and control of contraband found in the automobile. You know, quite apart from presuming someone's guilt, which that case seems to endorse, and sounds like burden shifting to me, nevertheless, that language says if you're the custodian of an automobile, which is apparently something even beyond ownership or short of ownership, depending on how you want to characterize it, there's a presumption that you have dominion and control over what's in your automobile. It doesn't require you be in the automobile.
First of all, I agree with the court's observation that if such an instruction were given to the jury, there may be a constitutional flaw in it insofar as establishing a presumption. But that wasn't raised, and it's really not important. More importantly, in this case, in Holden, when he was stopped, Holden was actually driving, says the vehicle, in possession, in control of the vehicle. When the police officer seized him, seized the vehicle, and the cocaine or the heroin was in the Chinese food in the vehicle. So Holden was in the vehicle where the cocaine was found. They were there, says together, he had control of it at that time. We don't know in this case that Mr. LaCates had control of the vehicle when the weapon entered the vehicle. It would be an altogether different case if the officer had pulled the vehicle operated by Mr. LaCates over on Route 40, pulled him over, stopped him, and then found the weapon under the armrest.
What's giving me trouble is this conflating of the notion of being a custodian and having dominion and control. What Holden says is if you are the custodian, in effect, it's presumed that you have control. So whether you're inside the car, outside the car, doesn't make any difference. If you're the custodian, it belongs to you. Using your example with the Capitol Police officer, you'd have to own this room. But if you own this room, the presumption would be that you have dominion and control over any contraband found in this room.
I don't think that under these circumstances, when the offense occurred, when the weapon was present, it's established that he was the custodian of that vehicle. Even mere knowledge, as the court observed in White, even knowledge that Gaunt had a weapon in the Pontiac is not sufficient to establish our client's guilt. Even if Gaunt, our client says, he may have been somewhere else, it was pandemonium there, he may have been somewhere else, saw that Gaunt had run over, says, ditched the firearm in our client's car, and perhaps our client was running to get it out or whatever. We don't know at this point because our client was not in custody of the vehicle, did not have dominion and control over the vehicle when we know the weapon was in the vehicle. That's what distinguishes this case from Holden, and that's why the court's rationale we submit should apply. If the court permits, I'd like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, Mr. Chief Justice, Danielle Brennan for the state. The Fourth Amendment protects citizens from searches based upon hunches and general suspicions. This is not what happened here. In turning to argument one that's been raised, The issue raised was whether or not there was reasonable and articulable suspicion to investigate this gold Lumina and the white Pontiac that was seen parked at the Wawa gas station a quarter of a mile from the scene where shots were reported to be fired. In looking at whether or not there was reasonable and articulable suspicion, the facts are of the utmost importance in getting to that. And the facts that we have here are that at 12:32 a.m., the Newcastle County Police received a shots fired complaint. A quarter mile away and about 8 minutes later, an officer responding to that call saw, part of the shots fired complaint said that that two vehicles were seen fleeing the area, a gold Chevy Lumina and a white Pontiac. In responding to that call, that was when the Newcastle County officer Sarnecki drove past this Wawa, a quarter mile away from Brookmont Farms where the shots were fired from, and saw not just one car, but both cars that had been reporting fleeing the area parked face-to-face at the gas pumps in this Wawa. Not only did Officer Sarnecki see these two cars together, but he saw a lot of people circled around those cars, and as he did his U-turn to pull into the Wawa off Route 40, he saw people fleeing the area fast enough. Now, Officer Sarnecki testified that his reason for investigating and his reason for going into the Wawa was clear. He wanted to investigate the cars. He wanted to see if they, in fact, did have anything to do with the shots fired complaint. And in doing so, when he pulled up, he saw that there were two occupants of the white Pontiac, and nobody was in this gold Lumina. Now, the issue raised was whether or not there was reasonable and articulable suspicion to stop and investigate this gold Lumina. And here, what resulted, and the state concedes, was a seizure of Mr. LeCades in investigating this car. What happened was a minimal intrusion by Officer Sarnecki by asking the simple question, do you know whose vehicle this is? At that point, after the repeated questioning and the repeated denial of any involvement in this car, that the car became abandoned. The issue raised was there reasonable, articulable suspicion to ask those questions and to lead to the abandonment of the vehicle, and the state submits that there absolutely was in this case. The two vehicles were seen fleeing. It was a shots fired complaint, and that is what led to the abandonment, and that is what led to the seizure of this weapon. This was more than a general hunch. It was more than general suspicions, and therefore, it is satisfactory under the Fourth Amendment. In turning to the argument whether or not there was sufficient evidence to support a conviction, it was upon that abandonment that Officer Sarnecki found this loaded handgun in the front bench seat of the vehicle. This handgun was located inches from where the driver sits on a bench-type seat, and it was under a folded-down armrest. It wasn't in a compartment. It was right underneath a fold-down armrest.
Well, it's fair to say that if the weapon's in the car, it's going to be inches from where the driver would see, and the issues perhaps could be no more than how many inches.
Yes, Your Honor.
Everything in
fair.
The car is within close proximity to the driver.
It is, and this was in especially close proximity just of where it was. And according to the defense's own witness, Michael Allen testified that it was LeCades who drove the car into the Wawa that day. So there's a reasonable inference from the facts that it was LeCades was driving this car. The car was ultimately found to be registered to him. And it's the state's position that there was nothing else on the record that was found to be illegal in this car other than the gun. So LeCades had no reason to deny any association with this car whatsoever, repeatedly for 15 to 20 minutes to the officer, had he not known that gun was in there.
You disagree with your colleague on the status of the title?
Well, respectfully, with respect to my colleague, I disagree that it was necessarily illegal. According to the record, the title was transferred November 30th. From my earlier days, if I recall correctly, they have 30 days to transfer the title before it becomes a traffic violation. Here, this happened on the 28th of December. Not being too vested in my mathematical skills, but that's under 30 days. So therefore, there was nothing illegal about the title. There's no information on the record about whether or not there was no insurance in the car, and that was there's just nothing to go off.
Well, I think that the appellant would probably suggest that the defendant knew even less about the niceties of the titling procedure in Delaware than you do, and perhaps he was confused about whether or not the title was valid and was concerned about that.
That's a fair assumption, but in going back to Your Honor's questionings of my colleague, the standard of review here is to view this, while de novo, but in the light most favorable to the state. The trial judge, as Your Honor's pointed out, ruled that he would have no reason to deny that the ownership of his car unless he knew, and it's a reasonable inference to draw from the facts, that he knew that the gun was in there. Knowing that a gun was in there is far more serious than knowing that he didn't happen to transfer title. And denying ownership of this car, and the officer said he was going to do an inventory search, it's reasonable to think he was going to find the title anyway.
Well, is the test for possession simply he knew it was there?
It is not, Your Honor. We get the test for possession by looking at the White case, and there's three factors: whether or not he knew the location of the gun, whether he had the ability to exercise dominion and control over the gun, and whether or not he was able to control the destiny of the gun. And the state submits to this court that all three factors are met here. He knew, reasonable inference to be drawn from the facts is that he knew the location of the gun. He was seen driving the vehicle in there. The gun was just inches away from where he would be driving the vehicle. And even if taking Michael Allen's testimony to the utmost of credibility, it's reasonable to assume that he saw David Gaunt flashing this gun around. And when the police came, Gaunt then gets into the other car, and being the owner of the car, he's presumed to know and have control over what's in his car.
Did the officer testify that he saw Lacates driving the Lumina?
He did not, Your Honor. The officer only saw Lacates standing in front of the Lumina when he pulled up.
And I think you've told us a couple of times that the officer repeatedly questioned Lacates for up to 20 minutes and received repeated denials of any knowledge about the car?
Yes, Your Honor.
What is your response to your colleague's argument that in those circumstances the officer was required, before being able to search the car, to ask someone at the Wawa, in charge of the Wawa, if they had any objection?
Respectfully, with all respect to my colleague, I disagree with that. There is nothing in the case law that supports the notion that he must go ask Wawa. Here, in looking at these facts, the officer was outside a convenience store at a gas pump for 15 to 20 minutes. And the trial judge was correct. This was a convenience store. The nature of this business is in and out. He was out there during his initial questioning for around 15 to 20 minutes. Nobody came out, said, "This is my car." Yes, he didn't go in, but there was nothing requiring him to go in. And in fact, had he gone in, it would have been fruitless because the owner of the vehicle was standing right next to it. This is no different than if the officer had pulled up, saw a vehicle parked at the gas pump, pulled up next to it, and waited 15 to 20 minutes for somebody to come out, and then realizing it's not pumping gas, and that's clear in the record. This car isn't using the gas services. 15 to 20 minutes have gone by, and no one's there.
So your response, and tell me if I have this right or wrong, is that in these circumstances, Wawa would have no legitimate interest in this car and therefore no standing to take a position one way or the other.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Let me ask you about the second argument. Let's assume hypothetically that the defendant is sitting in the driver's seat and Gaunt is sitting next to him, and Gaunt has the gun in Gaunt's pocket, out of sight. And then the police have reason to stop, and they pat down everybody entirely properly, and they find the gun in Gaunt's pocket. Is Lacates guilty of possession of a weapon by a person prohibited?
That certainly makes it a lot harder. It seems without more, I don't know if I could say he, beyond a reasonable doubt, he was. There may be a joint possession at that point, but without more, it would be hard to say definitively.
Let's change it a little bit, and let's suppose that there's someone in the back seat. Same fact, someone's in the back seat who has reason to cooperate with the police, and the person in the back seat said, well, you know, 5 minutes before you stopped us, Gaunt had the gun out, showing it to everybody in the car, including LeGates, and then when you were ready to pull us over, he put the gun in his pocket. So the difference in my second hypothetical is LeGates knows that Gaunt has a gun. Maybe he didn't know it before. And does that make any difference?
If in that situation, if it could pass through the white, the three factors in white, then he would be, if the state was able to show that he had, if he was able to exercise dominion and control over the gun, if they were close together and he could just reach it out. And if there was any evidence showing that in that situation, LeCates, you know, maybe if there was information that said LeCates had put that gun away or intended to guide the destiny of the gun in any way or said, bring your gun, let's go, we're going, then yes, on those facts alone, I don't know if I feel comfortable saying beyond a reasonable doubt he would be guilty of that. Here, however, it does pass the three white factors for constructive possession. Not only did he...
tell me, maybe you're going to tell me, how we connect LeGates and the gun. You know, he owns the car, but he doesn't own the gun, and we never have testimony of LeGates and the gun in the car at the same time. So the state's case appears to be circumstantial. Is that right?
That is right, Your Honor. And how LeGates knew that the gun was in there is circumstantial, and we know that by his close proximity to the car. He was standing right next to the car, whether on the side or whether in front of it. He was next to that car. Not only that, but he denied knowledge of it, of owning the car, when there was seemingly nothing else majorly illegal about this car. Looking at all of those facts, the facts that even if taken, even if Allen's testimony is found to be credible, the fact that it's reasonable to assume that LeCates had just seen Gaunt flashing around this gun, and everybody fleeing once the cops come, and the close proximity to the call of the shots fired, a reasonable inference to draw from these facts, given his secretiveness about denying ownership of the car, is to assume, viewed in the light most favorable to the state, that he had knowledge that that gun was, in fact, in there. Additionally, he had the ability to exercise dominion and control over the gun, given the close proximity and given the fact that he was attempting to hide the gun as well, by saying, I don't know whose car this is, I don't deny knowledge. And in having the ability to exercise the dominion of control, that also goes to the last white factor in that he intended to guide the destiny of the gun. A reasonable inference to be drawn is that he drove to this Wawa, it was testified. And it is reasonable in viewing the facts in the light most favorable to the state that the gun was in the car when he drove there. Even Allen testified that LeCates had driven Gaunt with him to the Wawa. And it was upon after Gaunt got out and flashed the gun around that Gaunt ran into the white Pontiac when the police arrived. Then you have the fact that he guided the destiny by preventing the gun's ultimate discovery, by denying the knowledge. Had the police not gotten to the Wawa, had he not denied knowledge, had the police not gotten there, it is reasonable to assume that LeCates would have gotten back in that car, maybe with Gaunt, maybe not, and driven away with the gun still under the armrest. So there, the three factors in white have been met. This is more than just being having a mere proximity to it. This is more than the facts in white where it was just knowledge. White was different in the fact that the two different types of cocaines, there was one a pink cocaine, one a white cocaine. And there's more facts here that distinguish this from white. He passes the white factors, but this is distinguishable where in that case Jan White was found to not have constructively possessed the gun.
Can you recall what LeCates may have seen when Gaunt got out of the car in relation to when Gaunt brandished the gun?
It's not exactly clear. I don't believe that Michael Allen ever testified that he could say definitively whether LeCates saw brandishing this gun. It is just not clear from the record, which is why in your standard of review, viewing the facts in the light most favorable to the state, it is a reasonable inference to draw.
Holden talks about the totality of the circumstances demonstrate a conscious dominion and control. What does that phrase mean to you?
It means, similar to the first factor in White, that he would have knowledge that this was in there.
This being the gun?
Yes, Your Honor, I apologize.
What I'm trying to figure out is, unless you just assume that this was the vehicle involved in the shooting incident and that someone with a gun that was fired in that incident was in the car with LeGates and he knew it, how do you make the connection that his dominion and control arising simply out of the fact he was custodian of the vehicle gave him knowledge that Gaunt had a gun while Gaunt was in his car?
The fact that he was so, that this was so close after the shots fired complaint, and the fact that he was trying to prevent the officers from figuring out the true ownership of this vehicle.
Well, if that was his object, he did it in a rather stupid way, because abandoning the vehicle gave him the best shot, sorry, bad choice of words, gave him the best opportunity to search his vehicle with impunity.
The state agrees with that, Your Honor. And again, it is reasonable to assume that he was not as well vested in the law. And to know that, he probably thought that he was saying, oh, I don't know, this is not my car, I can't do anything. As the trial judge certainly pointed out, he probably would have been in a much better place had he said, yes, this is my car, and no, you cannot search it. But he didn't. He was uncooperative. He was, with respect to that, he was denying any knowledge. And it's that denial of ownership of the car which leads us to believe that he knew that there was something in there that he was trying to hide. There is no testimony whatsoever that there was anything illegal about this car other than the fact that this loaded handgun was in it 8 minutes after a shots fired complaint. And what the officer was doing was investigating this car to see if it had anything to do with the complaint. And in doing that, he had reasonable and articulable suspicion. And in arresting him for the gun, he was not arrested until the gun was located and then the ownership of the vehicle was established. It was not until that point that LeCates was arrested. And the state asked that this court affirm the trial court's conclusion that he was guilty beyond a reasonable doubt.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Number one, Barnett didn't testify that LeCates had driven Gaunt to the Wawa. Number two, in White, there was some evidence, and the state keeps emphasizing, there's some evidence here to support an inference that he was guilty. In White, there was some evidence to establish guilt, even that it was more likely than not that Jan White was guilty of possession of the drugs that were in the closet. And the trial judge found beyond reasonable doubt on motion for judgment of acquittal that there was evidence beyond reasonable doubt. But that evidence was insufficient because a probability is not a guilt beyond reasonable doubt. As the court said in White, the finding is consistent with our ruling in Holden that mere proximity or awareness of drugs is not sufficient to establish possession.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you, counsel. Thank you. We'll take the case under advisement and recess.
Please rise.